Welcome to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley. Our team's goal is to present science-based information about gardening and all things nature in New York's Hudson Valley. Host Gene and Tim, along with team members Teresa and Linda, are master gardener volunteers for New York's Columbia and Greene counties. So if you're interested in gardening or nature or nuggets of information about what's happening outside your door, settle in. Enjoy the conversation. Whatever the season, we have something to say.
Hi, I'm Jean Thomas, and welcome to Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. I'm here with my partner in crime, Tim Kennelty, and as part of our Gardening and Nature 101 series, we're talking about native perennials for the beginner. Welcome, Tim.
Thanks so much, Jean. Really appreciate it.
We talked a lot on the show about the value of including native plants in your landscape. We're going to assume that you, as our listener, know that, but really don't know where to start in choosing native perennials. Tim's here to help. I understand you have a list of Tim's favorite native perennials. Shall we start in the early spring? Let's go through this season.
Yeah, that sounds great. I do have a list, and mainly I put this list together because I have people come up to me when I do a talk on native perennials or on natives and ask just how do I get started to begin with. And I guess my advice is that you want to plant a variety of perennials, and you want to think about a lot of different things in terms of siting and things like that, but you want to think about bloom time. So you want to have a variety, and you want to have something blooming throughout the season, so you're really supporting all the pollinators. So some of the very, very early blooming native perennials that we could talk about are, first of all, Virginia bluebells, which is an ephemeral, like some of the other ephemerals that you see blooming in really March, April, May, but probably pretty much in April. And these are beautiful bluish purple flowers, and ephemeral means that they show up in the spring. They bloom, they're a great resource for pollinators, and then they kind of fade away in the, mid-season.
So in some cases, the whole plant fades away.
That's right. So you want to plant them in an area either that you don't need to see something through the season, or you plant them among other plants that you know are going to be popping up, say, in June, July, and blooming then, too.
And don't panic if they disappear. Look them up and find out if they're an ephemeral.
That's right. And, these are specifically, they like to have a more part shade or dappled shade. They like to have rich soil. So unlike some of the really sun-loving perennials in mid-season. And there's others like Bloodroot and Spring Beauty and Jack in the Pulpit, Birthroots, which are trilliums. There's a lot of different ephemerals if you have that kind of woodsy condition. And again, they're beautiful, and it's really nice to see them in early spring. You start really seeing color, but also they're really, really important as far as pollinators go. So there's a lot of pollinators out there in that early spring period looking for nectar and looking for pollen.
And a lot of times the deer don't notice them.
They don't, but these are plants that generally you want to probably have in a fenced area. Some of them are more susceptible to deer damage, like trilliums are. And I think Virginia bluebells, I have them in a fenced area, but I think they probably would be eaten by deer and rabbits. So you have to be a little bit careful about that.
And another thing with the ephemerals, some of them, the whole plant doesn't go away. Like Jack in the Pulpit will stay and come up with this gorgeous seed pod
later
in the spring, too. So don't disregard those. But they're all pretty subtle plants. They're going to be small and low. So knowing where they are and remembering where they are and fencing them is a good idea, even if it's only to delineate where they are.
It sounds like you've dug up some of these by mistake, Jane.
No. But some of them have hidden on me for seasons at a time.
And I will say, even though we're talking about perennials, if you're really thinking about April, early May, you also certainly want to look at trees too, native trees, because that's really probably more of the nectar and pollen in that very early season. But if you're looking for perennials, you're probably looking for ephemerals. Another one that I would mention, and it's more probably late April, early May, is goat's beard, which likes the same kind of conditions. And the Latin name is Aruncus dioicus, but it's a very nice kind of plumy flower. It's bolder. It's probably 3 to 6 feet tall. These are occasionally damaged by deer, but I find them to be a little bit more deer resistant. They like that organic rich soil. They like a little bit of shade, but they're really showy and nice for an early season plant and really good for, you get a lot of bees on them. You get very early butterflies on them as well.
If you are familiar with astilbe, they're like an astilbe on steroids.
That's right. That's
and
right.
And the deer don't often nibble on them.
Yeah, I mean, again, nothing is completely deer-resistant, but I find that they kind of pass them by if there's something more interesting, like tulips and things like that. Another one I would talk about and really think about planting are wild columbine, which are Aquilegia canadensis, beautiful, shorter plants. They kind of pop around. I have them reseed a lot. They're not super, super reliable to be perennial, that specific plant, but they do reseed, and so you find them all through your garden. Really beautiful flowers. Again, really good pollen and nectar flowers for those early pollinators, and just lovely, really lovely in the garden.
And the flowers are distinctive red and yellow.
That's right.
When you think of Aquilegia or columbine, don't think of those commercial ones, the annuals that you buy. The non-natural ones are just like bloated.
And lots of different colors.
Lots of different colors. They're beautiful, but these are so unique.
And they're kind of, as you say, they're even though they're red and yellow, they're kind of subtle flowers.
They're elegant.
Yeah, they are. That's a great way of putting it.
Wonderful. Yeah, and they do like the moisture. They do like the shade.
And then I don't know if you've ever grown, the common name is Eastern Blue Star. It's Amsonia, but that's a really nice, it's almost like a sub-shrub that blooms in May. It's really reliable as a perennial, comes back year after year. It likes a little bit of shade, but it has these purple, bluish flowers, just beautiful. They don't bloom for a long, long period of time, but it's something that's blooming when a lot of other perennials are not blooming. It's a native, and again, it's a really good pollen and nectar flower.
And the flowers are a blue. They're like
The
native are like a steel blue.
That's
they're
right.
not a true blue that we look for, but they're a rare shade that you don't see. And they're another one. I'm a seed pod freak. They make the really neat seed pods as well.
They do. And they're relatively deer resistant. I haven't had the deer touch those at all. So if you have a place in your garden where you want to see that kind of color, that, you know, once they're done, their leaves look pretty good throughout the season, but it's not going to be blooming past probably late May.
And a lot of them do a nice golden fall leaf color.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Absolutely. Very knowledgeable about this, Gina.
Yes,
I'm impressed.
I am. Thank you.
And do you know, have you planted something called Green and Gold or Golden Star is the common name? It's a ground cover.
Chrysogenum.
Yeah, Chrysogenum virginianum, which is a really nice ground cover. It's, again, really hardy. It spreads fairly well. It has these beautiful yellow flowers, small flowers. It looks like, you know, it's kind of almost like, it looks like a little bit like a strawberry plant, but it has these yellow flowers. And it's a native, and it's also a great pollinator flower. Along with, there's a bunch of different native ground covers that bloom about the same time. I don't know if you know Waldsteinia fragaroides.
Aren't they the yellow flowery strawberry?
Yeah.
They look like a strawberry, but they got yellow flowers.
They're kind of similar, too. They're kind of a false strawberry. That's right.
Yeah.
And then another one that's kind of along the same line is there's a wild strawberry that blooms a little bit later. It's a spring bloomer. It spreads really nicely. It has really very, very tasty, tiny strawberries. It's kind of one of the parents of our strawberries that we eat out there from the supermarkets.
I taught a dog to hunt those ones. He did. He hunted strawberries in the lawn.
Well, see, you have a unique dog there. Some people have truffle dogs and you have a strawberry dog. This is a plant that is really, really important. It's a host plant for some butterflies, and it's one of those ones that people are saying it's a keystone plant. So it's a really good one to plant as a ground cover.
The golden ragwort.
Golden ragwort. Yeah. Do you plant golden ragwort at
all? I do not.
Pachyra aurea, and then there's Pachyra obovata, and this is one of those plants that's becoming really popular.
Flowers look like?
They're kind of spiky yellow. They bloom in the spring. It likes a little bit of moisture, so I have some planted in a drainage ditch. They spread well by rhizomes, but they also spread by seeds. This is a plant, and the reason why I planted this plant in the first place was someone had written an article about how this plant spreads so well that it actually outcompetes some invasive things like stilgrass and things like that. It's a really attractive plant, and again, if you want to have a nice ground cover, it spreads nicely. It's not super aggressive. You can pull it out if you don't like it. But I have it actually planted along a walkway, and it's really pretty, and it's pretty. The leaves are pretty throughout the year as well.
And they could be good for soil retention?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, and the Canadian ginger.
Yeah, Canadian ginger. And there's also a European ginger, too, that people plant as ground covers. But Canadian ginger is just a nice kind of subtle ground cover that spreads fairly slowly, has a pretty leaf. And it is. It's from the ginger family.
I consider that one as elegant as the columbine.
Exactly. It's a subtle, if you're walking around and you're really kind of appreciating and you're observing, it's not something that's going to jump out at you, but it's a really nice, pleasant ground cover, and it's native, and I think it's a host plant for some of the butterfly and moth species too, but I might be wrong there.
Okay, so that pretty much covers your early plants.
Yeah, now when we start getting into June and start getting into mid-season, mm-hmm. we start thinking about things like milkweed. And some people are milkweed fans and some are not. We all know that milkweed is the host plant, the only host plant for monarch butterflies. And there's basically three milkweeds in our area that are native to our area, the common milkweed, Syriaca, and then there's a swamp or marsh milkweed, and then there's a butterfly weed, and they all take kind of different cultures. The common milkweed will grow in a bunch of different
anywhere.
Soil types. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because they can be pretty aggressive and spread, but I always find that they grow where they want to grow. If I want to grow them in a particular place, I'm not usually successful, and I find them growing in kind of the middle of my perennial garden. I usually let them go because they're really beneficial plants, not just as host plants, but they're terrific nectar plants. I love the smell of the flowers. They're kind of a beautiful honey scent. They have a taproot, so once you have them there, they're going to keep coming up year after year. And then marsh milkweed, I don't know if you have that in your garden, but they like wet. So you can plant those in drainage ditches or along ponds. Again, host plant to the monarchs, pretty flowers. They come back pretty reliably. And the last, the butterfly weed, is an orange flower. It likes super well-drained soil, sandy soil, hot, hot, hot sun. So it's totally different cultural environment that it's looking for.
So that's another case where you should definitely read the label.
Read that label, mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a huge difference.
And there are other milkweed species that are not necessarily native to our particular area, but you can plant those. There's a bunch of different ones that, you know, if you really are geeking out on milkweed, you can plant. But these are the three that probably pretty much do the best in our area.
Oh, you got bee balm on your list.
You got bee balm on your list.
Bee balm on your list.
Well, bee balm is one of my favorites. There's two types of bee balm that are pretty much native to our area. There's Monarda didyma, which is kind of the bee balm you'd think of, which comes in a variety of different colors. There's been all kinds of hybridization. Super pollinator plant.
Hummingbirds.
Hummingbirds love it. It's in the mint family, so it spreads not super aggressively, but if you plant a couple of plants, you have a nice area of bee balm. Reds, purples, there's one called purple rooster. There's kind of mauve colors. I just love this plant. It smells nice.
Even the hybrids are welcoming to insects and
that's
birds.
Right. That's right. This is one that we talk about nativars and things like that. The cultivars of this all pretty much have really good value in terms of pollinators. And then there's Monarda fistulosa, which is super native to our area. You see it when you drive along the road. My neighbor's field has
any
it
meadow
in it.
Is going to have it.
Yeah, and these are nice. They're a little bit less sophisticated, I would
they
say.
They are mauve.
But they're mauve. But they grow really, really well. They come back year after year. I find that it's one of the first places I go out and find a lot of different native and honeybees, as well as the butterflies love it, and as you said, hummingbirds as well.
So, and they will make clumps and colonies.
Yeah.
So and they're very social.
There is a cultivar of this particular species called Claire Grace, which is nice. It's a little bit deeper mauve, but you really can't go wrong with bee balms as far as I'm concerned. It's a great, great perennial native. It would be close to the top of my list.
And they're in the mint family, which means the deer leave them alone.
That's right. That's right. And rabbits, too. I mean, this is one plant that I don't think I've ever seen deer browse. Very, very hard to say that about most plants. They just really stay away from it.
Now you have false sunflower, Heliopsis.
It's called fall sunflower. It's Heliopsis helianthoides. And what you'll see mostly in the landscape trade is there's a lot of cultivars of this. There's Summer Sun. I think there's one called Aztec Gold. They're 3 to 4 feet tall. They are beautiful, yellow, daisy-like flowers, great pollinator plants. One thing I will say about this plant is, and if you read about it in the literature, it is a 2, 3, 4 at most year perennial. It's not super, super, you know, long lived, which is fine because they do self seed and you can seed them as well.
Yeah, just move the babies around.
But the thing that I like about this plant is it blooms for an incredibly long period of time. It starts blooming, mine start blooming in June, and they bloom really pretty much throughout the summer, which again, with perennials, it's hard to say that about most perennials, especially if you deadhead them. So the next one that I would mention, if I had to pick a favorite flower and a favorite native perennial flower in my garden, it would be purple coneflower, which is Echinacea purpurea, because they bloom for an incredibly long time. They're relatively deer resistant, beautiful flowers. And again, this is the flower that the butterflies just go for. So when I'm out taking photographs of butterflies, this is where they go. They bloom probably from mid-July to sometime in August. In fact, I was just looking through photographs the other day, and I had them still blooming in September.
Yeah, and their seed heads last right through. Don't deadhead them.
That's right.
Later in the season, because the chickadees and the goldfinches adore them.
That's right. They're kind of this multi-purpose flower, and they're not picky about soil. They'll grow in a lot of different types of soils. Now, there are many, many, many cultivars of this plant. Mount Cuba has done a great trial study of the ones that are most floriferous. I suggest that you, and I'll put it on the website, go to Mount Cuba because they really go through a lot of these. And they also talk about which ones are most attractive to pollinators. I would say you be very careful when you get into the doubles because a lot of times they'll breed out the pollen and nectar of the plant. But you really can't go wrong with coneflowers. They're just terrific, beautiful plants.
And the plant is stocky and full, and like a child would draw a plant. It's what you want a plant to look like, and that's what the coneflowers can be.
That's right. That's a really great way of putting it, Jean. And when we were talking about the subtleness of aquilegias, this is not a subtle plant.
No.
And I have them growing 4 feet tall in my garden. There's different height. You can choose different heights, but it's a really robust, beautiful plant.
And then there's the cousin.
The cousin.
Black-eyed Susan.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of different other coneflowers, but black-eyed Susan's a whole different, the Rudbeckias, and there's a lot of different species of Rudbeckia too, you know, kind of different heights. But again, this is a plant that isn't particular about soil, likes full sun, as do coneflowers. Bloom for a long period of time. Most of the species bloom a little bit later than coneflowers, so you're starting to see them in late July into August. They spread nicely, so if you don't have a big budget and you plant a couple of black-eyed Susans, Rudbeckias, you're going to get more than a couple of Rudbeckias, which is really nice. And again, great, great pollinator plant, very little deer damage. I have deer trouncing right past them and they don't touch them.
Yeah, one of my best gardens was nothing but massive plantings of black-eyed Susans and Rudbeckias
and
the coneflowers. And they were just chunks of color.
And that is like, if you're really, and one of the things I never did and I do now is I think about looking at the garden from a distance, especially if I have people visiting me and they don't come off the deck, which happens quite a bit. They're probably just drinking cocktails up there and not going out into the garden.
There goes Tam with the drinking again.
But you really want to then plant in swaths. You want to plant multiples of these and you just see the sea of color for many, many weeks.
And these are natural if you're trying to put in a meadow.
That's right. Absolutely. And they'll bloom in the first year a lot of times if you have small plants or even if you have seeds. Sometimes you'll get them to bloom in the first year. What's Pycnanthemum municum? I didn't think anybody would ever ask me that question.
Here it is.
I don't know if you grow mountain mint. A couple of years ago, I attended a lecture on native plants, and I had never planted mountain mint. This, again, a plant in the mint family, super, super pollinator plant. It is not, doesn't have these showy flowers. It has beautiful gray, silver foliage, kind of fuzzy, and there's a couple of different species of this that you can grow. Muticum is one that it spreads nicely, although not aggressively. It has these small pink flowers, again, covered in butterflies and bees, very deer resistant, very rabbit resistant, blooms for a good period of time, and it looks nice throughout the whole season. In fact, this plant looks nice through October, November, its foliage anyway.
And there are the two main types of mountain mint, which is guaranteed to cause arguments because if you walk into somebody's garden and they point proudly at their mountain mint, uh-huh. and it's not like the one that you're growing,
right.
the argument ensues.
There's a mountain mint argument,
there
right?
There is a mountain mint yeah. argument. It's a classic.
Well, I have both of them, or I have a couple of them, actually, and tenuifolium is the slender mountain mint, and it takes a lot more kind of drought. It likes well-drained soil. I always get people asking me, what is that plant? It's shorter. It's kind of a little bit more floriferous. But again, same thing as far as rabbit and deer, and super, super pollinator. Really nice native plant.
And they look quite a bit different, the two types. So that's my warning. I've
they
been
do.
In some of those arguments.
So you just have to buy both of them.
Well, yeah.
Yeah,
that's pretty much the solution.
Yeah. So, and the next plant that I would talk about, which is blooming about the same time, is garden phlox. And a lot of people don't think that phlox paniculata is a native plant, but it is. I think probably they don't think that because it comes in so many different colors and shapes and sizes now because there's been so much hybridization. But this is a plant that most of the cultivars smell really nice. There's kind of an early series that start blooming in late June, but most of them bloom in, you know, kind of mid-season, July. Beautiful pollinator favorites like full sun. This is one that the deer may like a bit.
The deer come and prune mine. That's my new attitude. They come and they nip off the tops. By the time the plant regroups and makes new buds, the deer have lost interest.
It's a really good way of looking at it. Mine have been eaten to the ground in the past. So,
of course, they've also been known to run away from the deer because I find my flocks repopulating different areas. They just wander around at will.
We've talked about this, right?
Yeah.
And I find that the ones that repopulate, that self seed, sometimes are hardier.
Oh, they're
these
happier.
Kind of really robust plants. Yep. They may not be a cultivar, but I leave them alone because they're beautiful.
Well, we want native.
We want native.
They've gone native.
They've gone native, absolutely. There's one that, and this is another one that Mount Cuba has done a whole trial series on, so if you might want to go and look at, because they rate them, because some of them are a little bit mildewy. The one that has been found to be the biggest attractant to pollinators is called Gina. It was an it plant a year or two ago where everybody was looking for Gina. It's pretty robust, smaller flowers, but again, many, many, many butterflies. So if you're trying to attract butterflies, you see them on this plant.
And they come in a bajillion colors. And frankly, some of them aren't really nice colors.
I agree with you.
Thank
some of them
you.
Are a little crazy. We're agreeing on something. I can't
Ooh,
believe
write it.
It's
down.
Impossible. The next plant I would talk about on my list is wild senna, which is Senna marilandica. And this is one that, again, it's a really unique looking plant. It looks kind of ferny. It looks almost tropical. It emerges in the spring very late. So I've probably dug up one or two of these. It comes from seed well. I share seeds. It's in the pea family. That's why it looks, I think, a little strange. It has these little yellow flowers. And it doesn't bloom for a tremendously long period of time, maybe 2 or 3 weeks. But when it is in bloom, the bees from my neighbor's beehives come and find it. The native bees find it. It's a super bee plant. I don't know that there's as many butterflies on this, but it's a really nice plant for native and European honeybees.
It's got a good presence.
It does.
It can be very, very stocky.
It can be robust.
And yeah, you can put it as a background.
That's
and
right.
It just gives you really good delineation.
I think that's a great way of putting it because, some of my photographs have this as kind of a backup plant with other plants in front. Really, really beautiful plant.
Yeah, it should be in the rear so that you can admire the height and volume of
yes.
it. Yeah.
That's what they've said about me at times.
You've seen the pictures, haven't you?
And another one that's deer resistant. The deer just walk right past it.
I think that's one that's got herbal values, too, that they talk about. So that might be
one. You know, the funny thing is, when I started putting together this list, and I did it because people had asked, like, oh, what are some of the native perennials you'd plant? Most of these are pretty deer resistant because most of them are in the mint family or they've got some kind of
herbal something going on.
Herbal something smelly thing going on. Yeah. Yeah, like the next one, which is giant purple hyssop.
Love it.
But this is one I kind of came upon, and I planted this from seed, which I don't usually do. When they say giant purple hyssop, they are giant. Some of mine are 6, 7, 8 feet tall. They have these kind of cylindrical purple flowers, bloom for a very long period of time. Again, covered in bees. And I mean, if you have honeybees or if you've, you know, if you're looking for to please the bees or butterflies, this is a great plant. It's in the mint family, so nobody touches it. Again, it spreads by seed. The birds eat the seed in the fall. So it's never really damaged by the deer. I mean, it's kind of a vertical plant. It's not super wide.
It's like a tall candelabrum.
It is. That's yep. right. Yep. I'm so glad you're here to help me with the descriptions.
That was a four-syllable.
It is like a tall candelabrum. But it's a great plant, and it's a really easy plant to grow. It can be crowded out by other plants, so I would say, like, be careful what you plant near it, because if it's something really aggressive, it might push it out.
Well, I let mine go loose. So I have to rogue them out where they're not wanted, because they will crowd others out too.
Yeah.
Others come up a little bit later.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's other agastaches, but I find that they're not quite as reliably perennial.
Oh, no, the giant ones.
This is one that's, the giant ones are giant.
Yep. And the deer don't care for them.
That is correct. So next on my list is sneezeweed or Helenium autumnale. There's a bunch of different cultivars of this. I find the cultivars, which are pretty, to not be quite as perennial.
Yeah, they're kind of wimpy.
Yeah. One of those things where just stop hybridizing some of these things, right? The straight species of this is much taller. They can get to be, you know, 4 or 5 feet tall. You may need to stake them, but they have these really beautiful, they're kind of daisy-like yellow flowers. You can have yellows, you can have oranges. Reseeds really well, so if you're looking for more plants,
unless
you have a stand of them. Yes.
Unless you're into the hybrids, which are not only wimpy, but they don't reproduce very
well. They don't, that's right.
Either.
And if they do, I don't think they come back, you know.
Oh, they may not come back true.
They may not come back true to the parent, that's yeah. right. Now we're kind of really into August and September, mm-hmm. and so if you're looking to support your pollinators during those times, this is a really good plant. And it's, you know, it's again kind of vertical, so it doesn't take up a huge, huge amount of room in your perennial garden as far as the width. So you can plant it kind of at the back of the border with some
other
things.
It's a border plant.
Yeah, exactly.
And plant them in clusters. Do three or four at a time.
Well, I say that with pretty much all perennials, but this is definitely one.
But these you want.
A big stand of them from a distance is really mm-hmm. beautiful. Really beautiful. Just like New York ironweed. This is a plant not for the faint of heart, right? This is one of my favorite plants, but it also reproduces a lot, and I find myself digging some of them out because it does seeds a lot in the fall. But this is a very robust plant. They can be anywhere from 4, 5 to 8, 9, 10 feet tall. Purple flowers, August, September. Great, great pollinator plant. Full sun like most of these. Just a terrific perennial plant that comes back year after year. It's almost like a shrub. It's almost like a tree or a shrub.
It's like an aster on steroids. The flowers are very similar to asters.
That's true. I never really thought of that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's much taller and more robust.
Yeah, but it's like a giant aster.
And what I always say to people is, if you have these, make sure that they're in a place that you want them to be. Or if you see little seedlings, if you don't want them there, you better dig them out quickly, because they're pretty difficult to remove once you have them there, because they get a very, very intense root system, which is why they're pretty drought tolerant too.
And deer don't care for them.
That is correct. Although I have had deer nibble these down, and it's one of those plants where, as you say, pruning by the deer, because this is a plant that you can cut like mid-season, and it will make it more bushy. It will bloom a little bit later. It will bloom more fully. So if the deer come, it's like no big deal.
Purple. We got Joe Pieweed.
Joe Pieweed. You have Joe Pieweeds, don't you, at your house? I think I remember that.
Don't
yes.
I have on and off from time to time in my little swamp area. They come and go on their own.
They like wet.
I don't look for them.
And they do self-seed. It's, again, a pretty robust plant. There's a bunch of different species of this. There's a bunch of different cultivars of this. There's Little Joe, and there's There's a hollow chopaiweed, which gets to be 8-10 feet tall. Again, this is a butterfly favorite, kind of a mauve color. There are different, some of them are, there's a white version. There's kind of darker purple versions of this. There's a great trial right above this. If you Google, the Chicago Botanical Garden does trials too. And they have a really nice write-up of chopaiweeds, all the different ones, and you know how they fare. They rate them as far as their floriferousness and all of that stuff.
And the flower color is subtle on those, but they're a flower late in the season when the butterflies and all the other insect critters really need some feed.
That's so exactly
it's, right. It's more for their help. And we use them, like you say, architecturally.
Absolutely.
They can be very, very
absolutely, especially like the hollow one. You can put it way, way at the back of the border, and it's almost like a sculpture or something like that. It's so large. And I would not cut these down in the winter, leave them up for winter interest. And also, there are insects that most likely are going to hang out there over the winter, so you really don't want to cut these down.
Oh, now we're back to some regular size stuff. The New England Aster.
Yeah, New England and New York Asters.
They just changed their names.
They did. There's this whole thing about asters and the naming. But what I would say to you is most likely if you go into your nursery and you ask for asters, they're going to give you asters. You don't need to know all the names. And these come, in, again, in a variety of different species, in a variety of different cultivars. This is a really important plant for pollinators and also a host plant. It's one of the plants that Doug Tallamy says is a keystone plant, so really super important in the environment. You want to have some asters in your garden just for color in September, even into October. I had one blooming around Thanksgiving, if you can believe it, even though it had frosted. So they're resistant to, you know, somewhat resistant to even like cold nights and things like that, but beautiful purples and pinks. There's a Alma Pachki, which is pink. There's white asters. So there's really kind of an aster for any taste. Not very picky as far as soil, but I find that these do get nibbled on by the deer from time to time. I don't know if you've had that experience.
No, I don't grow, well, like the wild asters that grow by themselves.
Right.
They fend for themselves, and the deer don't usually bother them. I don't know.
You need to get some asters at your garden.
They must have a pact going on.
You just need to get some asters.
I'm putting them in my meadow.
Okay, good. Okay. Good for you. Good. Another one that's a keystone plant, and the last three we're talking about, New England aster, New York aster. The next one is perennial sunflowers, the Helianthus genera, and there's a lot of different species of Helianthus. It's perennial sunflower, really robust for the most part, some for wetter conditions, some for drier conditions. They can be really, really tall, beautiful yellow daisy-like flowers. Again, not only a great pollinator flower for those late season pollinators like those bumblebees, but also a host plant and also a seed plant for birds. So you want to leave these up in the over the winter as well.
Yeah, they're not picky about soil, but they must have sun or
that's
don't
right.
bother.
Well, they're called sunflowers.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, hello, right?
But, you know,
I mean,
you like that nice spot of yellow in the shade. It's not going to happen.
And I think the deer are kind of afraid of them. They're so robust. So they just keep walking by.
At seedling stage, they're deer candy. So you have to kind of guard them for a little while till they're big enough and fuzzy enough.
I'm really glad you said that because we're planning a perennial garden. I'm near a perennial garden behind our town hall, and we're planting small plants. And even though they're deer resistant, we're going to be a little bit careful because anything that's a seedling, I think, is kind of susceptible, especially to the younger deer.
Oh, the fawns experiment
and
everything.
Just want to try it out, yeah.
And the bunnies and everybody else.
So whenever we say deer resistant, we're going to disclaim here with a smaller, you know, baby plants.
Mature
size. That's right. We have to make sure that we, you know, don't get sued here.
But you got to make sure they get to mature size.
That's right. So if you have to fence, at least temporarily, it might make sense. And then the last that I have here of my top 20, and I hope we're up to 20, again, all these last three are probably, you know, August, September, October, is goldenrod, solidago. And I know a lot of people, solidago takes a bum rap because of Canadian goldenrod. First of all, it doesn't cause hay fever, let's be clear. And we're not really talking about Canadian goldenrod, although if you have it in your property and you can leave it be, you should, because this is, again, a keystone plant, super, super pollinator plant, great host plant for a couple different butterfly species. but I think beautiful. And there's a lot of different forms of this. There's a rigid form. I think there's a gray sunflower. There's a bunch of different species of this to plant.
Hortus has about 15 native goldenrods,
yeah,
different
right.
colors, even white.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. There's a wide assortment. And even though I think people have stayed away from this plant because of Canadian goldenrod, they're starting to become more available in commerce. And so, you know, take a look at, if you're interested in, you know, this particular plant and you can't find it, you know, look at your specialty nurseries, look at online. And that's something we didn't really talk about as we're kind of wrapping up here. You're starting to be able to find a lot of these in your, you know, your general hometown nursery, but you can also look at specialty nurseries. And there's a lot of online sources as well for these if you can't find them around where you're living.
And looking at this last five or six that you list, they are all good candidates for a meadow.
Yeah, absolutely.
So any of these would tuck
absolutely
nicely into
and if,
a meadow.
And if you don't have a big enough space for a meadow, I would say kind of make your own mini meadow and plant these either as plugs or as pots. Plant, you know, a bunch of each of them and spread them around. You have your own mini meadow, even if it's, you know, say 4 feet by 10 feet or something like that. And you're going to get the same kind of reaction in terms of, you know, bees and butterflies and hummingbirds and things like that. I mean, you really can't go wrong with these.
You put it over the septic tank where you can't plant a tree.
Yeah, absolutely. As long as for most of these, as long as you have sun, they're relatively deer resistant. And again, because they're natives and they've been around for hundreds and thousands of years, they don't take a lot of water. They don't take a lot of fertilizer. They're just, you know, they're pretty easy to grow.
Yep. Get them soundly established and they will take care of themselves.
So do you feel like I've educated you here, Jean, today on native perennials?
Immensely.
And I've had convinced you to plant some?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Uh-huh. I'll pay you later. Okay. How's that?
Okay.
That concludes another episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. We would like to thank Sandra Linnell and Devin Connolly from Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Green Counties for production support. And a special thank you to our listeners for joining us on this episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. You can find links to any of the topics mentioned in this episode at our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org. Comments and suggestions for future topics may be directed to us at columbiagreenmgb@cornell.edu or on the CCE Master Gardener Volunteers of Columbia and Green Counties Facebook page. For more information about Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Green Counties, visit our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org or visit us in Hudson or in Acre. Cornell Cooperative Extension provides equal programming and employment opportunities.